Track 12. And now we come to our feature article. And for our feature this week, we have advice from Sound and Vision on what to look out for to make sure you stay safe from scams and frauds, whether in person, on the phone or online. Sounding contributors Jill and Bob run Sound and Vision, which is a banner name covering magazine shows, podcasts and other audio recordings which they produce for a variety of organisations. On this occasion, they gather tips from a police expert and a representative from the Blind Veterans Charity. Although the item is directed at the visually impaired, the police contributor in particular does seem to assume that the listener is a regular computer user. We know that some of you are, but if you're not, you may wish to share the information with a partner or carer.
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
Hi, I'm Bob Baker.
And I'm Jill Hardiker.
And together we are Sound and Vision,
bringing you the best information, technology and interviews for the visually impaired and those supporting them. This time we're looking at scamming and how to avoid being scammed and what to do if you think you have been scammed.
We spoke to Roger, who is the Fraud Safeguarding Officer with Lancashire Police.
How can you get ideas about what the current frauds are that are out there at the moment? There's a great device, the SoundCloud.com, where it gives you access to the Metropolitan Fraud Booklet. Search for the Little Book of Scams, and you can listen to advice from the lead police force in the UK on fraud. It's also important to understand how you can become a target of fraudsters. Generally, there's two main ways that a group would target you. The first frauds are attempts where they have little or no information about you, and these may sound familiar. Mass market scams like such as phishing, which generate millions of emails every day sent out in the hopes that 0.01% of the population will click on them or act on a message. Nuisance calls. These are random calls that come through. Often there's silence on the end of the line until you answer, then a click, and then it's passed to an agent. They weren't even aware that your line had a live number at the end of it. They're just randomly generated. And also, beware of links and malware in websites and email, where they're sent out in the hopes that you will click on them and download a virus or malware onto your computer. With all of those, knowledge is the key safeguarding measure against these types. Messages from the government, like Stop Think Fraud, which is the campaign from Action Fraud, get you to slow down and think about what you're being asked to do or divulge, which is always a good defence. These attempts can change day by day, sometimes due to a vulnerability, tiredness, pressure and urgency generated by the fraudsters. You can click on a link or respond to something that you wouldn't normally. So the defence of Stop Think Fraud is always very valid. Then report the attempt. This allows the authorities to disrupt and close down sites or addresses so that no one else further down the line becomes a victim. The next group are attempts which have accessed small amounts of easily accessible information. These can be from social media or web searches about you, so be careful about what you share. Many of these can be used to either reassure you that they're a person in authority, or generally their guesses or hints towards what some password security might be. Be careful of information farming. If you've seen adverts online, chance to win a holiday in the Maldives, simply fill in this online questionnaire. Or apply for really cheap life insurance, simply fill in this application. Many of these are just a chance to divulge as much information as they can from you, so that again, they can build up a picture and use this in some of their attempts. Or they've accessed your account through an insecure password. So let me look at two of the ways to protect yourself from some of the ways that they target you. The first is some top tips to avoid phone scams. A fraudster will add emotional urgency so you don't get time to think. If a call is making you anxious or ill at ease, saying things like you're going to lose all your savings if you don't act on this in the next 5 minutes, or failure to pay this fine now will result in court or imprisonment. These could be signs that you're actually having an attempted fraud. Slow down and think about the campaign and pause what you're doing. The caller sometimes will ask you to transfer money to a new or safe account. Your bank would never ask you to do this. Never give out to anyone a verification code or a one-time password, not even someone claiming to be from your bank or the police. Or the caller might ask for your help in an investigation or crime, where you are at the end asked to hand over something of value. Historically, this fraud would involve a debit card, but then it moved on to cash, and now it includes valuables or even gift cards. I've had examples out there where victims have handed over £40,000 worth of gift cards to fraudsters. You can learn more about this under the section called Courier Fraud in the Little Book of Scams that I mentioned at the start. Next, it's a good idea to look at how they accessed your accounts and the ways to improve your password security. It's important that you choose a strong and unique password to protect each of your accounts. It can be really difficult to remember a large number of unique and complex passwords, and the fraudsters know this. They know that by mining information about you or doing just simple guesses, they can often access your accounts. There's useful information on the National Cybersecurity Centre, which is accessible using a screen reader and has audio clips. One area covers passwords. It shows you in clear information how fraudsters gain access to your accounts. But their advice is to use 3 random words to generate your passwords on your most secure applications, store your passwords in a browser. Following advice from the Cybersecurity Centre has been shown to reduce the chance of becoming a victim by over a third. Now in Lancashire, where I'm an officer, that alone would reduce fraud by over £12 million a year. A massive amount, and you can see the importance. The next area I'd like to touch on is abusive person of trust. How can we check that someone that we are giving access to our homes and our finances is trustworthy? In the police, we tend to see when someone has failed in this trust, such as a carer, financial advisor, power of attorney or family member. Some ideas or organisations you can look to as part of your checks into a carer are places like the Care Quality Commission. They will inspect, rate and report on home care agencies and the care that they offer. This will include how they recruit and select people that they choose to come into our homes. DBS checks. This is a basic check that will contain details of convictions and cautions that are unspent. They're completed with the consent of the individual as part of their application to be your carer. Reference is a good idea. If provided and followed up on, references can provide reassurances as to the character of a person and their previous working history. It's also all right to do your own information farming. Search for the person. Look for them online and see if you can check on their character and past activities. The caring sector, however, has a challenging environment to recruit staff. They are naturally a transitory and moving workforce, and many staff are new to the caring role and will have no history for you to search. Therefore, it's an idea to limit risks. Some banks now offer carer cards that limit a person's access but provides them with a card that they can shop without having access to your bank information or any other monies than that which you're happy to put into that account. Ask your bank what they do to support and you might find there's lots of ways. Finally, how do you report fraud? Action fraud on 0300 123 2040 is a great place to report fraud. They collate all the fraud that happens across the UK and then disseminate it to someone like myself to look after the victim and another to pursue the criminal. You use action fraud in all situations to report the fraud to try and reduce and identify what's happening out in the UK. But you don't use action fraud if a crime is in progress or about to be committed. If the suspect is known and can be easily identified, or if the crime involves a vulnerable victim. In all of those cases, contact the police directly, either 999 in emergency or 101 for a non-emergency, or of course, visit a police station.
Some great advice there from Roger.
Yeah, the carer card sounds a good idea with its own PIN number.
Yeah, you decide how much money's on the card and then just hand it to your carer to go shopping with no overspending worries.
That would really put me at ease because basically giving the card to somebody you don't really know.
Sometimes, yes.
We also spoke to Jo Cook from the Blind Veterans. She is the Safeguarding and Mental Capacity Social Worker.
So I sit on the National Task Force around scams. I'm working with National Trading Standards, Metropolitan Police, various other police forces. And it's really clear that year on year, scams are increasing. And criminals are clever. They look for people who are vulnerable. And it may be a whole range of vulnerabilities. One of that might be visual impairment, but it may well be that you've been recently bereaved or that you may have some cognitive impairment, a dementia, for example. So vulnerabilities, whatever that may be, is useful for criminals to take advantage of, which is awful, isn't it, in this world? We shouldn't expect that at all, but we have to just be aware of that. There's no data that shows that people with visual impairment are being scammed more than any other person with vulnerabilities. It's just the general nature of vulnerabilities which make people so vulnerable again to scams. What I would say is, within my work with Blind Veterans UK, is financial abuse, and that includes scams, is our top concern in our safeguarding world. It always has been. So for the past 3 years, financial abuse is the top category. And I know when I speak to our members, scams is the area that they're most concerned about, to make sure that they're protecting themselves. How can carers and families help? So it's really important to ensure that blame is placed on the criminal, to ensure that the victims feel no shame about their situation. And language makes a difference. And using these words puts the blame back on the criminal. So I think historically there's been some victim blaming around scams, like, why did you fall for it? Oh, too good to be true. Didn't you trust your instincts? And I think it's really clear any of us can fall for scams. So it's much more helpful if we use language with scam victims around power and control or manipulation, or you've become a victim of. So what are the signs that someone is a victim of scams? Things to look out for that might be helpful is lots of posts or letters in their home, large cash withdrawals or gift cards and sharing bank details, lack of money to pay for other things, lots of phone calls from strangers or companies, and being secretive about the above behaviours. Unfortunately, we know that when people have been scammed once, that their details are often shared amongst other scammers. So it's really important that people have blocks on their telephone. I would say that's a really important thing. And most of the phone companies or your individual phones will support with that, where you can determine who can contact you. Similarly, if there is mail that is coming through, which is asking for money, gift cards, etc., don't engage with it. It just continues. As soon as you engage, it just increases and continues. So I would say, just be careful about what you respond to. One of the caseworkers shared with me where a member was concerned about their bank statement, wasn't sure about some transactions on them, and the caseworker supported them to have a look at all their bank statements. It became really clear that actually there had been some fraudulent activity by scammers, and they supported them to go to the bank, raise the issues, and they got a refund of over £1,000. So that was a lovely example of where we can really support our members. Blind Veterans UK cover all four nations. We're open to new members. Please do have a look at our website. We have a criteria where people obviously need to have a visual impairment and to be a veteran. But to be a veteran, you can have done 1 day as national service and that counts. So please do check out whether you'd be eligible. We have a wide range of resources available to us. We have 2 centres, one in Wales and one in near Brighton, and they're rehab specialist centres, but also the opportunities for people with a visual impairment to go on holiday and have respite. We also have specialists in technology with visual impairment. So I would suggest, if you think you might be eligible, please do have a look at our website, and it is VI accessible.
More great advice, but from a different angle there from Joe.
Here are the numbers to ring if you think you have been scammed.
To report a fraud to Action Fraud, the number is 0300 123 20 40, or if it's a scam text, you can forward it to 7726.
And if it's a crime in progress, ring 999 or 101 for a non-urgent crime.
A big thanks to Roger and Joe for their advice and very good information.
Don't forget, don't be rushed into anything on a phone call. And if you aren't sure, just end the call.
Or if it's a suspicious email, don't open any links. And don't forget, report, report, report.
If you have any concerns, please contact your local blind association or, of course, the police.
Thanks for listening to Sound and Vision with Bob and Jill. So until next time, it's goodbye.
DNF Soundings.